I understood all right, but ass that I was, I didn't see what it had to do with me. I suggested sending him by sea. Impossible. The risk is too great. Ironically, his safest route is the one that would appear most dangerous, up the Mississippi to the Free States. One slave in a coffle may pass unnoticed. My one fearful problem is the white agent to go with him. I tell you, Mr. Comber, I was at my wit's end, and then I had word of you from Washington. I absolutely said, Christ, but he was in full spate. I saw then that God had sent you. Not only are you a man dedicated to fighting the abomination of slavery, but you are one who has the experience, the intelligence, and the cold courage such an enterprise requires, and you are not known. He smacked his fist on the table excitedly. If I had all the world to choose from, I should have asked for such a man as you, Mr. Comber. Will you do this for me, and strike yet another greater blow above all those you have surely struck already? Well, of all the appalling, lunatic nonsense I have ever heard, this beat everything. But I had to go very canny. Sir, says I, you honour me. Indeed you do. But my duty is to my country. I must return at once. He laughed exultantly. But of course, and you shall. You may do this thing and be in England faster than if you wait here to catch a packet home. Listen, sir. You would go upriver by steamboat as a slave trader, with a coffle for Kentucky, let's say, and without the slightest danger. No slave catcher will give you a second glance. You will sail straight on to Cincinnati. Why, you'll be there in 6 days, pass Randolph to our agent, and continue to Pittsburgh. You may be in New York in a week from now, sir, and a sailing there will have you home far more speedily than a boat from Orleans, where, remember, the Navy are watching for you. He had me, the little serpent. My innards quailed at what he had proposed. But against the risk, which he said was no risk, of running a fugitive nigger to Ohio, was the certainty that if I appeared at the Balliol College trial, my true identity must appear, and it would be into the dock for Flashy with the rest of the crew. My God, they might even hang us. When you have to bow the knee, do it with grace. Very well, sir, says I, looking solemn. I must accept. I must combine duty. And I forced myself to look him in the eye. With the desire of my heart, which is to assist you and your worthy cause. Comber couldn't have said it better. And the little monster wrung my hand and called me a savior, and it was all joy and good fellowship. We filed downstairs into a plain room at the back of the house where George Randolph was sitting at a table, writing by the light of an oil lamp. One sight of his face told me that here was a fellow I didn't like above half. He was about my age, slim but tall, and a quadroon. He had a white man's face, bar the thickish lips and a most arrogant, damn you, my lad, expression. He sat while Mr. Crixus, the name my little serpent chose to be known as, poured out his tale. And when he had been told that here was the man who would pilot him to the promised land, he got up languidly and held out a fine brown hand. I took it, and it was like a woman's. And then he turned to Crixus. You are in no doubt, says he. A right uppity white nigger this one was. We cannot afford a mistake. There have been too many in the past. Crixus, to my astonishment, was all eagerness to reassure him. None, George, none. As I've told you, Mr. Comber is a proven fighter on our side. You could not be in better hands. Ah, says Randolph, and sat down again. That is very well, then. He understands the importance of my reaching Canada. Now, I take it the modus operandi is, as we have already discussed it, and that Mr. Comber is capable of falling in with it precisely. I just gaped. I don't know what I had expected, but certainly not Lord George Bloody Randolph. No, indeed. You'd have thought he was doing Crixus a favour as the old fellow went through the plan, and our runaway sat, putting in his points and pursing his lips like a judge on the bench. Finally, he says, Very well. It should answer satisfactorily. I cannot pretend that I welcome some of the details to be chained in a gang of blacks. That is a degradation which I had hoped was behind me. But since it must be, he gave Crixus a pained little smile. Why? It must be endured. I suppose it is a small price to pay. My spirit can sustain it, I hope.
It can, George. It can, cries Crixus. After all you have suffered, it is a little thing. The last little thing.
Ah, yes. Always the last little thing, says Randolph. He turned in his chair to look at me. I was still standing, too. And you, sir? You will have been told, sir, how vitally important is this journey of ours. So I ask, do you trust yourself entirely to carry it through, simple though it should be?
I could have kicked the black bastard off his chair. But caught as I was in the trap Crixus had sprung on me, what was there to do but cram down my resentment on top of my fears? I was an overloaded man, believe me.